irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Wouldn't you know?
Yeah.
That's an Irish accent.
On a very British show. Congratulations, Michael. Very,
that's why I did it.
Like an island off.
A neighboring
well done.
Country.
We should talk about Welsh accents. Let's do
we
that.
We should. Yeah. Can you do one?
No, not even close.
You can do a little Richard
Burton? I can barely do Liverpool.
What?
I can barely do Liverpool.
Oh.
I had to do Loot. Do you remember Loot?
Fiona, was that Liverpoolish enough?
I don't know what to do with the body. It's about as good as I can get. Will it work? We'll stay away from it. We could do Welsh. We could really push for Welsh.
I don't know.
I can't understand anything Welsh people say anyways.
Yeah.
Let's push for it, Michael. And not only
maybe
that.
Maybe one of the ladies can do it for us.
Do
you guys think?
Our guest, Wendy. Wendy Baines can do it.
Would you like to come over to my house and have a nice cup of tea?
Is that Welsh?
It is, yeah.
Wow.
Because we got lots of mountains, valleys.
Well, now, tell me about Liverpool. Liverpool accents, like a real...
Yeah, I'm from Liverpool, aren't I?
Right?
Yeah.
I like it.
You like the accent?
I like it. We go all Beatles now. You know, Michael has a special connection to the Beatles.
I do. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
But if we're going to get into doing accents today, then people are going to turn off the radio. They're going to run and flee because I tell you, I had the strangest experience going to see Whistle Down the Wind in London, where they do American Southern accents. And I thought, oh no, this is what we've all sounded like to the Brits for so long. Oh no, it was horrible. And it's so funny because it's not necessarily that it's a good or bad accent. It's whether or not it's familiar to the audience. So a kid from the South goes to hear something that and you pick up on every little thing. So now whenever I have to do a show with a British accent in it, I immediately go back to my dialect coach and go, okay, high British standard, that's all we're going to do and it's going to be the safest accent ever. Because it's distracting when you hear somebody try to do an accent and it's a little bit off from what you remember. Very strange. But we fell in love with London theater listening to Whistle Down the Wind because so many of the things that we had never caught in the show when it was in America was so prominent because you were hearing it in a different dialect. It was interesting to feel. So, are you Andrew Lloyd Webber fans? Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm a huge Andrew Lloyd Webber fan.
I tell you, that was an eye-opening experience.
Well, you saw Justin in an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
That's true.
That's
very
right.
True. That's exactly right. And not only that, but did we talk briefly after the show? I think we met briefly after the show, yeah?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, what an interesting thing, too, because we got to talk to so many people who were Webber fans, which is kind of
we're
a cool
talking
thing,
about
too.
Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, starring Justin.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here it is, Michael, June 7th. And, of course, as we've said, we have a huge show for our listeners today on State of the Arts.
We do.
Four guests in studio today, and the directors and stars and playwrights of two exciting shows are here that are going on right now in the Southland.
That's right, Andrew. And today we'll be discussing the West Coast debut of Old Frenemies at the Stephanie Fury Studio Theater as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival, as well as a very British lesbian.
That's right.
At the Zephyr Theater. So shall we go ahead and greet our guests?
Let's do it. Michael, who do we have here today?
Absolutely. We such a bad lead in, Andrew. Please welcome Wendy Meredith Bain and Justin Anthony Long and Fiona Goodwin and Wendy Hammers.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
And the crowd goes wild.
The crowd goes wild. And two of them are British. So
and
that's
two of
the
them two, are Wendy's.
The
too,
two Wendy's, yeah. Looking for their Peters. Oh, that's
no, that's
their
where
Peter
the name
Pants.
Yeah, that's where the name originated from. Because the little girl that was J.M. Barrie named it after couldn't say the word friendly.
Yes.
So she said Wendy. So
isn't
Wendy comes
funny?
From Friendly Fairy.
Ah, sweet. I love that. I love that story. I do.
Well, now here it is. We're going to talk more to our guest in just a little bit, Michael. But the important thing we do before that is we must thank our amazing sponsors.
I think so, yeah. And we want to get a paycheck this week, right?
I think that's an important thing to do. That's right.
We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, Princess Cruises for coming on board as our presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2018. A pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences, only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing creating fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of customer service that can be unparalleled. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to destinations that are more than 360 in number worldwide aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Experience the next wave in vacation travel at the end of each month from September to August. One lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships. Make sure to come to our website here at LA Talk Radio and find our State of the Arts page, which is in the archives. And when you come to that page, there will be a logo for Princess Cruises. You click on it and you register. It's a very quick registration, and it is your chance to win. And you can do that as many times as you like, and it's once every month. So we would like you very much to do that, and maybe you'll find Andrew and I on the cruise at Jura.
I would love that. Unfortunately, we're not eligible to win, Michael.
Oh, we aren't?
No. They won't let us travel the high seas, my friend.
All right.
Well, we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com.
You said ignore.
Well, I was going to say ignorage. Ignorage, which I think is a city in Alaska, right? Ignorage, Alaska. It's right below Anchorage. I'm not sure. So, but this is one that we should be particularly careful to, because I got all my information for both of these shows, as well as so many others, off of PerformingArtsLive.com. They're, of course, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. And we're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We're grateful. Yes, we are. Such a great resource for the arts, and they have been with us for 8 years.
That's right.
And speaking of great things, Andrew, very quickly, anything great happen in your theatrical week?
You know, I was traveling all week and running all over the place. I saw no theater this week, and my life was worse for it. How about you? Did you get out to see anything?
I didn't get out to see it, but I was working on it like crazy.
Right?
Opening 3D theatricals. Beautiful, beautiful production of Parade.
That's right. What an amazing show.
It is an amazing show, and it got an amazing review today in about 11 newspapers, and we couldn't be more excited. Davis Gaines from Broadway is one of the stars, and Rufus Bonds Jr., of course, who created his role of Jim Connolly in Parade on Broadway, recreated it in this production, and the star, Jeff Skowron.
Wow.
Yeah, who was the best actor in a musical for our Los Angeles Ovation Awards when 3D did this 5 years ago.
That's great. How wonderful.
Yeah, they got 15 nominations and won the five top prizes. Overlooking being overlooked were the Pantages and the Amundsen Theater and the Center Theater Group. So that's
tough
a
to beat,
very
no
big
doubt.
Compliment.
That's right.
Yeah.
So. Well, now where can people go to read this review and find out more about Parade?
They can go to Los Angeles Daily News. They can go to the Orange County Register. They can go to many, many sources on the internet. Just punch up Parade review. 3D theatricals.
Wow.
It'll come up, and it is going to go into a second week at the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts this weekend, and then we move to the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center on the 15th of June and are there until the 24th.
Wow.
Yeah. So you'll have to come down and see it. You've never seen it, have you?
I've seen Parade a number of times.
Oh, you have? Parade,
yeah, but I've never seen this production, which, of course, is much heralded. Where can people go to read that review?
At Los Angeles Daily News, LADailyNews.com, or OCRegister.com.
That's great.
That's
great.
A big Orange County paper like the LA Times.
Yeah. Well, we'd encourage people to check that out because Parade is a major musical with major music and significant topic issues that are really important to discuss.
Still relative to today.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's set in 1913.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get on and meet these lovely people.
We got a lot to get to today, don't we? Let's do it. Very excited about this show today. And now we are here and very excited to speak with a couple of extraordinary talents that have conspired to bring a fantastic new comedy play to the stage. Old Frenemies is about settling old scores and finding true love, and is on stage at the Stephanie Fury Studio Theater as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival.
The playwright and star of Old Frenemies is with us today, a comedy actress and writer. She is also a British import, now making her home in Los Feliz. On TV, she has appeared in numerous award-winning sitcoms, including Peep Show, Ill Behavior, Fresh Meat, and Babylon. As a writer, she has written a TV pilot for BBC Wales and has had several film scripts commissioned.
And joining her today is the director of Old Frenemies. He is a director, writer, and actor with a very impressive list of credits to his name. Some directing credits include City of Dreams, 7 episodes of Sorry, and Take Out. He recently wrote the opening number to the 2018 CBS Diversity Sketch comedy show and the new musical comedy Welcome to Shoofly.
We are so happy to have them both with us today, ladies and gentlemen, to tell us more about Old Frenemies. Please welcome the very, very talented and very lovely Wendy Meredith Bain and Justin Anthony Long.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Justin Anthony Long here. You've directed film, theater, and how did you come to be involved with this amazing show with Miss Wendy Bain?
Sure. Well, it was, I don't know, maybe in late February, early March, and I was recently coming off of doing a little writing for the CBS Showcase.
Of course.
And I was looking for something to direct in L.A. for the stage, because since I've been out here for about 3.5 years...
You were losing your soul?
No, I found...
That's when most people go back to the stage.
Out here.
Most people come from the film industry and go, I've got to get some theater in my life immediately.
Well, I mean, I get that, like how other people feel that. Like, for me, I really enjoy... Both.
I love that.
Where were you that you said you came from?
I lived in New York City for 4 years.
You did. Are you from New York?
I'm from New Jersey, so I'm East Coast, you know.
They always make that distinction, don't they?
They do.
The New Yorkers. No, I'm not from New York. I'm from New Jersey.
It's the Garden State.
That's right. Beautiful place.
Well, I love them both.
They are great.
Yeah.
And you came out here 3 years ago and immediately started for CBS?
Oh, no. So that CBS was this year.
Okay.
And 3.5 years ago when I moved out, I was doing a lot of nothing and struggling.
How honest of you.
Yeah, well, hey, you know,
hey, it happens.
It's sort of starting over a bit, you know, new place, new people. And luckily, about a year later, I booked my first show as a performer, which Michael and you both, Andrea, saw, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat at 3D, who's you guys
directed by Broadway's Mark Kudish.
Right.
I've forgotten that.
Who was actually in the show in his early career, playing
one of
the
played
brothers.
Reuben.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my God. It was incredible to work with Mark. And, So I did that. I'm trying to come back to what the question was.
How did you get involved with this show? But we're enjoying this journey. Oh,
we're
going to step away from it. We're having a good time.
So
how did you get involved with my show?
Right. So it was shortly after the CBS Showcase and earlier this year, and I was looking for something to direct on stage because I had done some film directing for my buddy Ari Frankel for his show Sorry Ari.
Cool.
And I was poking around on the Fringe website on Facebook and saw that somebody was looking for a director for a new British comedy play, and I reached out to Wendy, who sent me the script, and I thought, even on the first read, I was like, wow, this is hilarious. I am so lucky that the first thing I'm reading
is actually really funny.
It's really funny and just so well written, you know, dramatically, and the characters just, you know, they jump right off the page, and I thought immediately, wow, I hope I can book this job. And Wendy and I met, clicked, you know, she had checked out some of my work on my website, and, you know, we had a similar sensibility, and
was
here
it
I am.
One interview, one conversation, and you guys were locked in to move ahead?
If it's there, it's there.
It was,
Really
so
cool.
You didn't see anyone else?
No, I did see quite a few people.
The truth.
I was also looking for someone American. Because I thought there's no point in getting a British director because they're not going to know the things that cross over because there were certain things we had to change so that Americans can understand. There's certain words that have got different meanings. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I can say one of them on the radio.
Well, we've always said a title of one of your shows that was provocative, so go ahead.
Was that Fresh Meat?
Yes. Well, yes. We use the word cock a lot, but it's in reference to a male chicken.
Wait, coke?
Cock.
Oh, well.
See, that was her accent, Michael. Do you see the problem?
Accents now
make everything more interesting, don't they?
If I say cock, it sounds different right away. You can't really get away with it.
Our listenership in certain parts of the country has skyrocketed, by the way, with this conversation.
Well, it's certainly being said during the right month of the year, isn't it? It's just pride everywhere, pride.
That's true. Good point.
It is a male chicken. I think you call them roosters here, but we just call them cocks.
She said that with a vengeance. Did you see her face with that?
I'm going to desperately try to get this back on track, and I don't think there's any way possible because we've got to give out at least the show info.
We do.
Frenemies, which is a fun show because it's got a lot of this kind of humor in it, right? A little bit irreverent, but lots of fun. And also talking about something that's going on a lot right now where you're in a relationship that's somewhat ambiguous. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
How does that theme play with audience that you've seen a little bit in this?
Well, I first of all wanted to write something for people in their 40s, like an ensemble piece. And also, it seemed to be the age group that I've noticed that people have suddenly got divorced or gone traveling or changed some major thing about their life or discovered something about themselves. And I thought that was a deep well for comedy writing. I went on a trip to, my husband booked us this cottage in the middle of Wales, and we went there, and the lady that was showing us around was like the last person I ever want us to see again in his lifetime. And I didn't recognize her at first because she'd lost a lot of weight. And I was completely freaked out. And after 2 days of being there, I made up some excuse so that my husband would bring us back to London.
Wow.
And then halfway back to London, we stopped at Bristol for a cup of tea. And I told him, I said, you know, that her real life name is Jackie. I said, that Jackie, we were best friends from when we were like tiny babies. Our mothers were best friends. And in our teens, we fell out because she took my boyfriend off me.
Oh, my.
It was weird because I was back there in my 36-year-old body. I'm not 36 now, but at the time I was 36. And I felt like 17 all over again. And I just wanted to get the hell out of Dodge.
Well, we found Jackie and that old boyfriend, and they're here today. Let's bring him in. Well, I love this experience, and you hadn't told me quite that much about it, but the thing that I love the best about that is there's so many relationships that are like that today where you know the person and you don't know if you're friends or not. It's such a strange thing.
Yeah.
I have it daily where I'll meet somebody, I'm like, are we tight or no? I don't remember, but you shake their hand and you talk and then you wait to see, you know, kind of, because you know them and you know, but you don't know, you know, if you're close enough to talk about how you actually are, if it's just a greeting, hello,
you're tight,
goodbye.
Or your Facebook official.
So
or
true.
It is,
that's
so,
I'm sorry, are we actually friends on Facebook or just friends of friends? You know,
right.
So,
yeah.
It's interesting to see because I think that that is something that in our digital world, we meet so many people and certainly in Los Angeles and, you know, auditions and meet and greets and all this sort of thing, we meet people and I think that happens very often where you run into somebody and you're not sure what the relationship is. How have people responded to that so far and what you've been seeing?
Well, we sold out on our preview night.
Wonderful.
We sold out on our next night. We're
which is tomorrow.
Our last
tomorrow?
Night.
Great.
And we do have some dates in between that we still got some seats. But people really love it. It appeals to different decades of people, different generations, and they're like, people just love British humor. Like, even when we weren't trying to be funny,
right.
People laughed every time we said the word squirrel the other day for some reason. The Americans just thought that was hilarious.
Squirrel,
Michael, squirrel.
So, I'm lost.
Squirrel, it's a little fluffy thing with a big bushy tail.
I got the picture.
What I love about this the best is that when you talk about old frenemies and the idea of it, everybody immediately knows what you mean, right? They're people who we like and we know we have a history with, but we don't necessarily want to be around all the time. And I love this story of having traveled to a totally different place in Wales and stopping and having that happen, because it changes all of your expectations, right? Your life changes very, very quickly in that. I had it happen on a bus one time. I was catching a bus to an audition in Burbank because my car had broken down. And I'd maybe ridden the bus 10 times in Los Angeles since I got out here, and I stepped on, and there was a guy from my hometown who we'd known briefly and hadn't gotten along real well, and yet sat on the bus and talked the entire time and had a great time all the way to Burbank and got a hook up, and you know, still are friends to this day. But that kind of thing happens in a city like this, and I think it changes your experience and your understanding of how connected we all are. Have you stayed in contact with Jackie at all, or is that
no, you
never went back to talk to her?
No, I haven't.
She's vented on this
on the show. She better not go back
it's
now.
Never going
on
to
the
happen,
upside, though, we did get to learn a nice Welsh accent because of Jackie, so that's a good thing. Oh. See, benefits all over the world.
But it's out of your system now because
you've told it to thousands.
As if writing the show wasn't enough to get it out of your system, right?
Yeah, writing is therapy, definitely.
No doubt about it.
Oscar Wilde said, "The pen is mightier than the sword."
So true. Now, how can people find out more about the show? Where can they go to learn more about it?
They can go on the Hollywood Fringe website and type in "Old Frenemies," and they can get tickets. We have a code for the talk radio listeners, which is capital L, capital A, T-A-L-K. That spells talk, doesn't it? Yeah, L-A talk. You can put your code in, and there's a discount for the listeners today.
And you can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Old Frenemies L-A.
Old Frenemies LA. That's great. And also, of course, we've mentioned that this is part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival, which if you don't know much about it, go check it out. There are great works of art going on there and so many different topics that you can go learn about. So,
of course, that's at the Stephanie Fury Studio Theater, which is at 5636 Melrose Avenue in Los Angeles. And quite a lot of our theaters, our smaller houses are in that area. So you can also go to a website here, right? It's kind of an unusual URL, but I'll give it to you. http://hff18.org/4881.
So tickets are $15. They go on sale, of course. They're already on sale now, and they have been for about a month. And you said audiences have been very receptive to this. Mm-hmm. There are different performances where that are sold out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So be sure that you check the seating charts and all that sort of thing, and make sure that it's tickets are available. And get them now, because shows like this, when they catch fire, seats go real quick. So we're talking to Justin Anthony Long and Wendy M. Bain today about Old Frenemies, a show going on at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. One thing that kind of caught my attention about this is that it's a shorter subject, correct? It's not a full two-hour show, is that right?
No, it's a 90-minute play. We've adapted it for the stage.
Did you say 19 or 90?
90.
No, okay, good.
And zero.
Otherwise, that $15 would be a huge price.
Well, it's $12.
A dollar a minute.
We pay for the theater by the minute. So you said 90 minutes, and is that something that you've ever hoped to expand? Would it ever become a longer piece?
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of stuff that I edited out. It could be a two-part play. We're hoping that somebody will want to take it on to something bigger. I've also got an outline for a TV series for it as well, that we take it on and keep the characters.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Now, being that it's at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, do they also kind of pitch in and try to get the industry in to the greatest degree that they can? People that are as you say, would be lovely to pitch to TV. Mm-hmm. Do they try to get producers to come in? I would think they would, and I would think it's a haven to find new work, and with many possibilities of becoming a film or a television series.
It isn't the same
as... Or expanding it.
Yeah,
as a
it's
play.
Not like the Edinburgh Fringe. The Edinburgh Fringe in England, all the TV execs, all the casting directors, anyone that's looking for fresh new content, mm-hmm. go to the Edinburgh mm-hmm. Fringe. Like Phoebe Waller-Bridge did her original Fleabag mm-hmm. show there. Like mm-hmm. people go there to get fresh new talent, fresh new ideas. Mm-hmm. The Hollywood Fringe is still catching on in that sense. I mean, we all are in like the TV and film business, so we're inviting all our contacts to it. And we were part of the Asylum group, and they did like a press package for us and stuff like that.
Nice. They're a good group, the Asylum
group.
Well, so we have, that's the first of the two British shows that we're going to be talking about today. And Wendy Meredith Bain, who has been speaking to us, and Justin Anthony Long, who is directing Miss Bain in this production. We should come and go and see this.
I think it sounds great.
Yeah.
A lot of shows at the Hollywood Fringe, too, you can access. So you can go to one in the afternoon and then one in the evening.
Yeah.
It's a really cool thing. So if you want to spend a day just going to the theater, what a great way to do it.
Absolutely. It's fun. And to get into that little artsy area down there, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard and Melrose Avenue, and lots of great restaurants, and go early.
That's right.
Have some dinner. Walk across the street to the theater you're going to. So, shall we move into our second half? Let's go ahead and do it.
We'll give out this information one more time just so people can find it real quick. That's HFF, that's Hollywood Fringe Festival, 18.org/4881. Of course, she mentioned the discount code, which is so generous. There's LA Talk, that's capital L, capital A, Talk. And then there's Brits LA as well, which is another great one to use. If you're trying to get out there. And, of course, such a good British community here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So many great British pubs you can go visit. All my Anglophile friends always take me out and say, we're going to go do hobnobs and we're going to go to tea. And I love it. It's a great experience. And this is certainly a fun topic. I assume people
leave.
Where
can you get bangers and mash?
I'm so glad you finished that sentence. Certainly King's Head. Is that correct? King's Head is a great one. I stopped there. Of course, Cat in the Fiddle.
There's a great Brits and LA breakfast that happens every Tuesday morning at Zaccone's in West Hollywood. You can get a proper English fry up there, which I absolutely love.
Say it again. Where's it at?
English fry.
It's at Zaccone's in... Did I say that properly? Zaccone's
in West Hollywood.
I'm actually
not sure. I've never heard of it.
But there's a Brits in LA Facebook page. If you go onto it, you can join the community, and they organize loads of fun events.
That's right.
At Chaconis, Chaconis.
Thank you.
Is that how you say it?
We're getting pronunciations from all over the place, right? We can barely handle our American accents, let alone our British accents.
For years and years and years, I represented Andy Gibb from the very beginning of his career to the end of his career. And his family. And I represented the brothers, the Bee Gees. And their dear, sweet, God rest her soul, mother... She would cook English food all the time. And one of the things that is very popular is Brussels sprouts. I know that, right?
We love our sprouts.
Yes, and I watched her cook, and I, you know, if I was cooking them, they'd be done in 15 minutes. She cooked them in the same way, in the boiling water, for like an hour.
Yeah. Wow.
And I said, Barbara, what? She said, oh, that's the way we like our sprouts, you know. We like them done. And
yeah,
I said, really?
Yeah.
I said, aren't they done after 15 minutes? And they kind of are, but they were kind of really soggy.
And that's the way my mother cooked. You just cook,
really?
Yeah, you just cook something until it lost the will to live, basically.
Oh, wow.
That's a great way of saying that. I love it.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, shall we have our guests switch seats?
I think so.
Doing it, maybe we'll skip our live arts calendar. Yep. If you guys would like to go ahead and switch out, we'll bring in our other crew. If you guys would love to stay, we'd love to have your embarrassing moments at the end of the show.
Yeah,
okay?
Definitely.
You can
come back and tell
us. So one of the things I want to talk about, and it is British related, is do you know the Up series, Michael?
I do not.
It's a documentary series that started in the 50s, I believe, where they followed 7-year-olds, and they're up to 63 up or whatever it is now. Maybe it's after that. But it's interesting to watch because all of these young people who they followed for all these years, now in their 60s, are now adults, of course, and you followed them 7 years out of each of the... every 7 years you catch up with them. So you go back and you talk to them 7 years later, and it's amazing. This is a great documentary, and it's being released later this year. Of course, each installment is released every 7th year, and the next one is coming up here at the end of this year. So I'm very excited about that. And as I was doing my British research and talking to all these people who had great British stories and British transplants and all that sort of thing, I realized that there's some really great things that I'd never been aware of. And this documentary is one that I started watching and fell in love with. It's a really cool thing, and it changed the documentary drama. Again, it's called the Up series. If you Google it, you'll find out a lot about it.
And where can you find it?
All over the place. I think it's some on Netflix, but certainly it's rentable on all the online streaming sites and that sort of thing. And again, it's every seven years. So there's 6 parts of 7-year history. They follow these people now for almost 3/4 of a century, which is pretty cool to see.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Great idea.
No doubt about it.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you yet another pair of gifted artists who are joining forces to bring us the amusing, inspiring, and affecting new solo play at the Zephyr Theatre, A Very British Lesbian.
We have today with us the playwright and star of the show, who will be talking to with us about her storied career both on and off the stage. She was a missionary in Honduras, a high school behavior specialist on the TV show Britain's Worst Teenager, and worked for years as an inner city school teacher in the UK.
Her move to the States also prompted a move to the stage. An L.A.-based stand-up comic, she has appeared at the Comedy Store, Flappers, the Colony Theater, and the Electric Lodge.
We also are very pleased to have with us today the director of A Very British Lesbian. Some of her many TV and film credits include The Sopranos, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Bernie Mac Show, The Unborn. As a comic, she has appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show and with Craig Ferguson, among countless other TV performers, and maintains a busy stand-up schedule.
As an actress, she has two solo shows that she tours around the country. Her award-winning play, Undressing New Jersey and Other States of Mind, and Ripe. As a producer, she created The Hungry and The Horny Show. It's the same show, The Hungry and The Horny Show, and the monthly live spoken word show, Tasty Words. We're so happy to have both of these wonderful women with us today to tell us more about their project. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, the show's playwright and star, Fiona Goodwin, and its director, Wendy Hammers.
Right.
Ladies. Welcome back, Wendy Hammers.
Thanks. Great to see you, Wendy. What a cool thing to talk about. And obviously, was it Grey Nomads we talked about with you last
week? Yes.
Such a cool thing. And so many of these shows that you do, you bring such a light and such a spirit to. What did you find about this show that said, I've got to be a part of it?
Oh, that's easy. Fiona is a light, to use your word. She's very special. And I have to say, I say no to a lot of solo shows because it's kind of like giving birth when you spend a year of your life developing. Dramaturging and, you know, developing material. I mean, any director can tell you it's a commitment. And so I only work with people that I think I really can help, who are really ready to do this work, who are willing to pull back the curtain on their life and be vulnerable, and who are a lot of fun to be around, and no divas.
And you immediately knew.
I was drawn to all those things in her.
I love talented
and funny, yes, and a story worth telling, for sure.
Well, you also direct cabaret, because you've directed a show that's coming to headline my supper club.
John's show?
John Cuccioni,
John Ciccolini.
Oh.
Frank Sinatra Screwed Up My Life, Confessions of a Romance Addict.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah. By the way, I wanted you to know that you have two directors in your studio today that are from New Jersey, and you have two Wendy's. What are the odds? Like, the whole combination
and
is
two
bizarre.
Brits. That's pretty cool.
And two Brits. All of it, yeah.
That's amazing. Pretty cool. We're in Paris today, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting show.
Did you say Paris?
Paris. It's an interesting show, too, because one of the things that we were talking about is the subject matter, with it being, obviously, a transplant show from London. Did this play in London at all, Fiona? Do you recall?
I did a version of it called My Top 10 Crushes.
Amazing. And so it was an extended version or a shortened version, or was it just different material?
It was similar material. It was based around, it was a comedy thing, but I didn't have when I met Wendy, she made me write a script.
She's crazy that way.
Yeah,
that's right. You got to have a script. But now, was it received well in Britain?
Very, very well, yeah.
And what were the changes that you expected or that you had to make for an American audience?
Right. I think that some of the vocabulary, but on the whole, I tried to, I probably Britished it up more.
Really?
Yeah.
How funny.
Yeah, because it goes down so well here and people are so kind to the English.
There's a whole section in the play about the high-powered lesbians of West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And
is there such a thing?
Really? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes people hear about it and they get concerned. If she talks about it in her show.
They get concerned?
Well,
I say to part of the show is about the high-powered lesbians. I get very excited because I get invited to an event in West Hollywood, and I tell people in the audience that, you know, if you're a high-powered lesbian and you don't live in West Hollywood, you don't need to panic. You can move. Because that's where you really need to be.
That's great. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about this from your personal background. You've obviously been a missionary in Honduras, and as we said in your bio, that you worked in the inner-city schools all throughout Britain. Tell me how that affected you going into comedy and entertainment.
Because there can't be too much that's funny in Honduras, right?
Well, I mean, humor is such a great gift that sometimes you find everybody trying to rely on humor, sometimes even in the darkest situations. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you?
Well, I think being an inner city high school teacher, if you don't have a sense of humor, you don't stand a chance.
Right.
And I managed kids by making them laugh. And some of the kids, they didn't have much to laugh about, so being at school was, you know, that was something that was very, very helpful. In Honduras, I mean, there were some very ironic situations. I mean, I went out to Honduras to get cured of being gay. I hoped that I'd heard that it was the best place in the world to go and get cured, and so I went out there, and it was also a performing arts school, and I auditioned, and I got the role of Satan. And
wow,
yeah. And while I was there, there was a girl on the cast who played the part of the Virgin Mary.
Was she pretty?
She was incredibly pretty. Yeah. And we fell in love. And so we toured Honduras and Canada and various places, you know, having a rip-roaring affair whilst preaching the gospel.
Wow.
Wow. Yes.
I think there's a show in that somewhere.
Yes,
my goodness.
Yes, exactly. Wow.
So this is interesting, too, because obviously with your history as a school teacher and obviously the life that you've led, you found humor as something that you desire to bring to others. Do you need that for yourself as well? Do you find that giving humor to others is cathartic for you as well as seeing them laugh?
I think that with the upbringing that I had, which I won't go into too much detail about, but it was... I'm reminded a little bit of in Roseanne Barr's autobiography. She talks about, you know, as a child she used to stand on the table and do jokes. She would do jokes to stop people talking about the Holocaust.
Wow.
And in my family, laughing was a way of lightening things up.
She was talking. She was doing jokes about the Holocaust.
No, she wasn't doing. Sorry, she was stand. She used to stand on the table and dance to jump up and down and just tell jokes to make everybody laugh to break the. You know, the misery of listening to people talking about the Holocaust.
Well, yeah. She's taken it to Twitter now, and look what happened.
Perhaps I shouldn't have mentioned Roseanne.
I wouldn't worry about it, absolutely. In fact, she's certainly timely. But it is interesting, too, when you see people who've come from a background, and she, of course, had a tumultuous childhood as well.
Yeah.
And not only that, but dealt with mental illness and all kinds of things. And I think you find that humor, and so many of our, you know, the clowns who laugh on the outside but cry on the inside, so many great comedians don't like to laugh in their own life. They feel like it's the only thing they can give to other people.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that's such an important part of understanding psychology and who we are, is what do you need to give to others to feel good about yourself? Sometimes comedy is the only thing they have. So,
yeah. I think also that when you are living a lie all your life, and you're just desperate to lighten everything up. And then when I came out, then I discovered that I could use that on stage. You know?
Was it hard for you to come out?
I think that would be an understatement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spent much of my life trying to get cured. I had exorcisms and things like that too.
At the insistence of your
church.
Family?
No, the Evangelical Church.
Really?
Yeah, they tried really hard. They were very, very lovely people, and they were very, very keen for me to be able to have a normal life. They wanted the best for me, and they believed the way to do that was to get out the demon of homosexuality.
Had they been successful in trying to do this with other people?
I'm not aware that they have been, no. They certainly weren't successful with me. They tried really hard, which is why I then went to be in a convent for a while. To see if that would work, and it didn't.
Now, when you say you went to a convent, did you undergo the process of becoming a nun?
I stopped at taking my final vows.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were a postulant, and you went through all the varying degrees?
Yeah.
And what are your views on religion since then? Is that something that you've talked about in your show? Is it part of the subject matter?
It isn't. I tell the stories, but I don't really get into it particularly. I just think that... authenticity, and that would be my religion now, I think.
What is a subject that people are going to see when they, I mean, obviously it's got a fun title, and obviously it's very tongue-in-cheek in a lot of ways, but when you come to see the show, what do you want people to leave with?
I think everybody, and this is what people tell me, that they leave with is, they leave with a sense of how can I live my best life, my biggest life, how can I, what are the things that are stopping me from being out and proud in whatever version that means for them. So...
Well, it's interesting, too, as we talk about all these British shows and we talk about America view of British theater and theaters, British view of American theater. I remember when I was sitting in the audience in London watching Complete History of America Abridged, and I listened and I realized that it was the Americans laughing the hardest at the silliness of this. And it was interesting to see that kind of shared history that we have and how we love to laugh at ourselves. Mm-hmm. So certainly the British community here in L.A., I'm sure, will flood this show. And I'm sure plenty of Americans, too. But it is interesting to see how kind of cross-cultural humor has such a different meaning to each person depending on their background. Again, the name of the show is A Very British Lesbian, written and performed by Fiona Goodwin, whose voice you heard here today, and directed by a friend of the show, Wendy Hammers, who's sitting next to her, who you heard as well. You opened up on May 27th, and you run all the way to July 1st, so still a month left to see it, at the Zephyr Theater.
Yeah. And tickets are $25, general admission, $30 reserve seating, and $20 for groups of six or more. So get a group together, and that'll be cost savings for you. And tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com. And the special URL there is AVERY, British Lesbian, dot BPT.ME.
And, of course, that's Brown Paper Tickets if you just,
or just go
there
to brownpapertickets.com
and put in
the name of the show, and you'll see it come right up.
That's right. I think another cool thing about this, too, is they've done the same discount code that that we talked about earlier, BritsLA. That's BRITSLA, and you'll get a discount, which I think is a fantastic deal there.
See,
as well.
I think you would have made a good nun.
I was a good nun. I mean, people were very keen to. People.
Are there any bad nuns? Are there nuns who just. They're not good. Okay, all right. Yeah. I didn't go to Catholic school, so I don't know.
I did. That's why I know. For 12 years, I did.
Being a nun is very, it's, you know, your rent's paid, you have lovely food, you've got community around you.
I mean, and where can I go to look into this? Because I need some rent payment, man, I'm telling you.
You're in. He's in. Sign him up.
Yeah, of all the things I'm not supposed to be, a nun is like number one. I have the hair for it, but that's about it.
You have postulant hair.
Interesting, because you do have a very reverent spirit. I think that was one of the things I felt off of you in the waiting room when we talked. I always go out to talk briefly to our guests to see if they can, you know, communicate on the radio, because occasionally there's somebody who comes on and just gesticulates and never says anything, and you're like, this is not going to work. We got to go to Facebook Live immediately. But it's interesting, when I talked to you, there was a thoughtfulness about your spirit, and there was obviously something that you you were very considerate in your words. And it's interesting, because that is reverent, you know, and I could see that going to become a nun would have been something that would have been appealing.
Yeah. It was very appealing. When I was younger, I worshipped Catherine Kuhlman. I don't know if you know who she
was. I do. I remember her because my parents used to have her on TV. Catherine Kuhlman.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I was so little, but I thought, who is this?
She was a performer.
She was really, but she used to fill entire football stadiums with Christians, and she'd point at them, and they'd be healed, and then they'd all fall down.
Wow.
And that's really what I wanted. I wanted to be able to point to people and make them fall down.
Wow.
I mean, I had a...
We could try it on L.A. We could just walk around. Some people might fall down anyways. They're half on the way there sometimes.
I had such a vocation, and I wanted to do something in the world. So it was utterly devastating to me when I realized that I really was gay, and that my career path as a Christian to becoming whatever it was, a mega evangelist and doing good in the world, was completely gone. And I couldn't be a nun, and I, working as a missionary, didn't work because I fell in love with the girl playing the Virgin Mary. So it was just a catalogue of disappointments.
Yeah.
And the play really does a good job chronicling 30 plus years of her life, where she's desperately trying to fit into an idea that the culture says you need to be this person in order to be a good person and be safe in the world, and she's fighting it. So we see they're funny and heartbreaking, these stories of trying to be with men and that doesn't work, trying to be with women, and then just all these things that go on that don't allow her to just be who she is.
And you realize that. I mean, you were meant to be. You were born to be who you are, and you were the product of that.
It's
a very lovely one, I might say.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I want to talk very quickly about this, about the royal wedding, with Wendy and also Fiona a little bit. That's such an amazing experience when it happens, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Have you participated in this as a spectator?
I went to the British Consulate for afternoon tea with one of my fellow actors, Craig Robert Young, and we had a lovely British afternoon tea there supplied by the Dorchester.
Wow.
I love the royal family.
And it's such pomp and circumstance, and everybody gets involved, don't they?
I love
did
the
you
Dorchester.
Wear a hat?
I didn't wear a hat, but back in England we have street parties. So we close off the street and you all get together and all your neighbours make a dish and you make a dish. And it's just a great way of celebrating our culture, and it brings in billions into our country.
Yeah,
even
of
if
course.
They wanted to have a quiet wedding, right. they couldn't because it's just so big for our economy.
I watched a documentary of sorts that they had done on her and him to some degree, but she's the one that was walking into this, and what we saw was effortless. She was doing everything right, and it must be very difficult to adapt to those things. Even, I mean, she's an actress, so maybe she was just playing a role in this particular documentary.
They have protocol people. Years ago, I did the Princess Trust, and I was there as a backing singer. And the day before, you get the royal protocol person come out, and they tell you that you're not allowed to turn your back. I think Princess Charles and Lady Diana were there. Mm-hmm. So when you left the stage, you had to lean backwards. You can never turn your back.
Really?
Yeah. So we got paid a whole day's wages just to do stuff that was royal protocol.
My goodness.
And then afterwards, when you do the kind of line of handshaking and stuff like that, you don't make eye contact with them until they make eye contact with you. But they work really, really hard, our royals. They do a great job with charities all throughout the world.
Yeah, that's true.
I had an experience there with Princess Anne. We went over to do with Andy Gibb, went over to do an all Australian concert with Air Supply, and all of the Australian acts came in, but Andy was headlining it. Mm-hmm. And we went to, and it was for Princess Anne's charity. And it was pouring rain, and I couldn't find my shoes at my hotel, my dress shoes at my hotel, and I was frantic. I was in a tuxedo, and I had no shoes. I had moved rooms, asked the bellman to pack me up and move into another room, and he did, but I don't know what he did with my shoes. So I had no shoes. And I ran down to the lobby, and I said to the manager, please, do you have a shop here that sells shoes in the hotel? Because I see you have a dress shop. And he said, no, we don't. And then I saw a bellman coming on, an older gentleman. And I looked down at his feet, and I said, what size are you? And they were scuffed up, though. And he said the right size. And I said, listen, I'll give you $20 if you can let me wear your shoes for the next couple of hours. And I'll let you wear mine. The only thing I had were cowboy boots.
I'd love to have seen him in them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
but I went over
to
the limo's in waiting, and Andy's in the car, and his mother's in the car, and I get in with these scruffy shoes and tell this little story to them. We get over to the hotel where the reception is being had with the princess, and they make the royals aware when they're in a receiving line of a little bit about something, because they don't know everyone, a little bit about you, who you are, very little. But when it came to Andy was beside me, so she of course knew who he was, and they had a nice conversation, and then I had my opportunity, and she and I talked a minute or two, and it was very casual, and she was very, very gracious. And the event was over, and Andy thought that I had talked a little bit too long to her. And I said, well, why would you say that? I said, I'm a good conversationalist. And he said, well, what does she say to you? What were you talking about? And I said, my shoes. Which we weren't. But he said, that makes sense. Okay.
To this day, if you go to Britain with Michael and you pull back the covers, as I think we've all done, you'll find him wearing two pairs of shoes, both basketball, not tied. So, now, I got to say, we want to make sure that everybody knows about these shows, but also about the performers. Fiona, where can people find out more about you personally?
I have a website, fionagoodwin.com.
And she's very, very popular in Honduras. Mm. Yeah.
And I also have, just a very British lesbian .bpt.me. If you go to Brown Paper Tickets and you just put in a very British lesbian, you'll find it.
Yeah. And a few other things, possibly. Wendy Hammers, how about you? Where can we find out more about you?
WendyHammers.com or TastyWords.com.
Both great websites. I used them both last night, as a matter of fact.
All right.
We're going to do embarrassing moments, and then when we get, we're going to switch microphones up here, as we have six people in the studios today.
Yeah, full house. So we'll get everybody real close right here.
That's right. If you guys wouldn't mind kind of squeezing around a microphone here.
Bring your chair with you.
And before we dig in too far, Justin Anthony Long, where can people find out a little more about you? Do you have a Twitter account we can follow?
Sure. I don't have a Twitter, but...
Of course, nobody does anymore.
I beg your pardon.
My website is justinanthonylong.com, and you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Justin Anthony Long.
Cool.
Why don't you have a Twitter?
I signed up for one. I don't think I've ever tweeted.
Everybody go tweet him right now.
There's a lot to keep track of already. With
way too much, especially with one man out of Washington. Way, way too much.
Wendy Bain, where can people find out more about you?
My Twitter is the Wendy Bain, not because I'm particularly special, but because all the other Wendy Bains were taken. So it's at the Wendy Bain. My Instagram is Wendy Meredith Bain, M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H, is the middle word. And I'm also on Facebook as Wendy Meredith Bain, too.
Wow. And I hear the voice of God rolling in.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Can you start us off with an embarrassing moment?
I did a film called The Beverly Hills Massacre once, which I don't think even made it to DVD. But I was playing the role of a woman who was having a relationship with her son, and I had to stab him, and they gave me a non-retractable knife. And the fear of actually stabbing him properly sent me to the bathroom, where I vomited violently. And then came back and carried on, and the chap was still lying on the floor, but he was also suffering from the breath that I was breathing in.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's not smart fight choreography right there.
No.
Wow.
No.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. Wendy Hammers, what you got for us?
You know, being a professional stand-up comic for 25 years, not a lot embarrasses me.
That's true.
Why I'm in this business. It takes a lot to stump me. And this question has stumped me the first time I was on your show. You know, the actor's nightmare, of course, I've forgotten lines. I've had gas on stage as a comic, so I had to make sure that the audiences were laughing loud enough so that people couldn't hear the farts.
Yeah, don't mess up that night. You're right. You don't want the crickets that night.
But I would say that probably the main thing as... I really had to think about this, is I was on the Craig Ferguson show years ago as a comic, and I did go up right on my lines on stage while you're doing television, and it's just
nothing
literally,
you
hear crickets, it's talking about crickets inside your own brain, and you're just like, okay, here we are, hanging out on the edge of the, and I found my way back, and the audience didn't know the difference, but every time I watch that piece of tape, I cringe, because I remember that space where you're like, it's like you're jumping off the Grand Canyon, you don't know if you'll ever see the ground.
We've all been there. There's no doubt. Justin, what you got?
I was auditioning for the world premiere of the musical version of Little Miss Sunshine that debuted out here at La Jolla. And I was auditioning for James Lapine and William Finn. Mm-hmm. And so I get in there, and James Lapine's looking at my resume, and he's like, Justin Long. He's like, there's an actor, Justin Long, right? Like a big one. I was like, yeah, he's doing really well. And luckily everybody thought it was fun and funny, but I was like, why did I say that?
Did you get the job?
You did not get
the job. I had a part in As the World Turns, the long-running CBS soap, and I was playing Barbara's maid, and I was in Barbara's house. And I was desperate for a pee, so I ran into a bathroom and used it, only to find out it was a prop bathroom.
Oh, no.
And some poor little intern that was like the son of somebody that worked on the set got blamed for it, and I just let him take the blame.
No.
How wicked of you.
I was I'm always embarrassing myself.
Wow.
Oh, if you could have me on the show 50 times, I'd have
We may have to do that. Yeah, if they only get better from there, too, that's pretty important. So, Michael, today we have talked the proper name for male roosters. We have talked bathrooms that don't actually serve as bathrooms, and we've talked terrible British accents. This was a full show today, my friend. There is no doubt. That's right. Quite literally, almost. Well,
exactly.
Thank you all for being here. What a pleasure to have you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, old frenemies, U.S. premiere at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, and that is at the Stephanie Fury Studio Theater. And it is happening now. So go and see a hilarious night with a good friend of mine, actually, in the cast, Nick Hardcastle. Mm-hmm. Nick, if you're listening to this program, I miss you, and I'm going to come see you.
Yay, we love Nick.
Yes. Again, and also a very British lesbian, mm-hmm. which is opened already at the Zephyr Theater. And that is The Life of Fiona Goodwin. It's a star and playwright. And from what you've heard on this program, it is something, definitely something that you want to see, mm-hmm. right?
And how much are tickets there for A Very British Lesbian?
They're 25 worth, 25 general admission.
Great.
And there are also some discounted tickets available with the Brits LA.
Another great, great deal. So again, those discount codes for each show is Brits LA will work for either one of them. And of course, LA Talk will work for Old Frenemies if you have a chance to do that.
We also have a handful of tickets available on Gold Star. Folks want to check that out.
Excellent. Thank you so much for saying that. And of course, Gold Star allows you to review the show afterwards as well, which I've always found is a great way to kind of get some word out there about it. Also, the Hollywood Fringe has so many great projects going on right now, so there's good stuff there too. Be sure to check out their website and see what's going on. Check out the documentary, The Up Series, which will be released later this year. A fantastic way to follow psychology and filmmaking at the same time.
Indeed. So, ladies, thank you. Justin, thank you. And
thank you.
We're going to try to get there for sure. And Andrew, always a pleasure to work with you every week.
So good to see you again, Michael.
Thank you.
Hey,
where
do I get to see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.